Welcome home. I'm Kirsten.
And I'm Graham. And this podcast is the home ec class you wish you'd been offered.
We're two moms who've been real life best friends for more than two decades. We're trying to create gracious homes that are welcoming, but also functional, all while dealing with real life schedules, budgets, and children.
Stick with us and we'll share and show what we know, what we've learned, where we've messed up, and how to fix it. For everything we can't make up, we'll bring in the best experts we can find. You're listening to Welcome Home.
On today's episode of Welcome Home, we'll discuss the psychology of grocery shopping, couponing, and why it turns out, in the end, we're just not that intelligent.
Plus, why those on a tight budget should avoid classical music, the dirty secret of French fonts, and why Graham always breaks left when entering a supermarket. All that and more on today's episode of Welcome Home.
Welcome home, Graham.
Welcome home, Kirsten.
So
5 years in the making.
What are you talking about?
I wanted to do this episode.
Yes.
This is like supermarkets uncovered. Today is like the secrets of supermarkets. And we literally brought in the best expert. I tracked him down. We have the best expert. In fact, we are so cool. I'm going to give ourselves a little pat on the back. We did an interview that spans 2 days.
As Graham and I said, this is where the art of podcasting became the science of podcasting. You guys know how many time zones are in Australia? Many, many.
There are many. Do you know how many time zones are in the world? I think there's something like 115. So today on our show, we have Dr. Paul Harrison. He is a major international figure in the consumer behavior sciences. He actually is in Australia. He's the head of the Department of Marketing.
And unit chair of consumer behavior in the Department of Marketing at Deakin Business School. Is that what you're trying to say, Graham?
That's exactly what I'm trying to say. But he's kind of the definitive companies from all over the globe call him. He is the head of research. I think, again, he may have come from the Wall Street Journal. We tracked him down. He's just constantly being quoted, and we got him. We got him on the show. He knows all about consumer behavior.
I was actually Googling before we were researching this. I was Googling, I just put in Google the psychology of supermarkets, and I came upon this business insider interview. Sure enough, they were like, Mr. Harrison says, Dr. Harrison says.
He's completely quoted. And we got him. We got him on Welcome Home. So we're very honored. But today we're talking about supermarkets and why we do what we do. Well, and how and then we just got into this kind of very deep philosophical, psychological conversation about like the meaning of life. You're going to like this one. I think this is a fun episode.
You know who I really wish had been a fly on the wall for this conversation?
Your dad. My dad.
Your dad.
Yes, I know, because he's getting schooled by Costco every single day. Can we explain
the mustard situation?
Have we discussed the mustard situation?
I don't think the listeners know about the mustard situation, Graham.
This is a great story. So my father, we're not really sure how to describe him, but he's
the kind
retired
of man who is not going to tolerate a bad honeydew from Costco. He is bringing it back.
My dad is a professional returner of things. He retired a little bit too early, and now he spends his days wandering Costco looking for deals. We're not even sure. But if he gets a bad piece of fruit, he will return it. I mean, I don't know if any of you do that, but yeah, if he cuts into a melon or a honeydew that's not ripe, it's going back to the store.
Right.
And it's worth a trip to the store, no matter how much the gas costs or the time or the labor or whatever.
So he's basically proving what Paul said about it's just not worth your time. But anyhow, so there was the free refill situation.
Oh, yeah. So Costco, if anyone's familiar with it, you can buy a soda, a drink, like at the little market they have at the front where they sell the food for like 99 cents or 89 cents.
I think it's 49 cents. It's
something very reasonable.
It's already quite reasonably priced.
Right. So one day, many, many moons ago, my dad purchased a soda and he drank it. And then he promptly went home and he washed out his cup. And the next day when he went back to Costco, he brought his cup back. And then the next day and the next day and the next day and the next day. And then at some point he realized that his cup was still like holding strong, but he just was like not in the mood for soda. So he decided to start filling his cup.
No,
with-
Graham, that's not what happened. Oh my gosh, I can't believe he's your dad and I'm remembering the story. He got called out. They're like, there are no free refills. You have to stop bringing your cup, remember?
Right, because he kept bringing the same cup.
So he was so bitter that they stopped doing free refills. Although there were never free refills. That was a policy he made up himself.
Well, it was free refills if you were there that day. That was the issue, right?
Oh, that like, was
you don't
the
get,
issue? Okay.
You don't get refills in perpetuity. It wasn't like... It wasn't one time you bought a soda for 49 cents and you could drink forever at Costco.
So he's like, okay, you know where there's it's always free. The mustard is
condiment bar. You know where you could put stuff on your hot dogs and it comes out in the squeeze container? So my dad started going over and filling his old Pepsi cup up with mustard. Like, but it was actually like a really nice mustard that they put out. Like it wasn't a normal just yellow mustard. It actually had those little seeds in it. It was really nice. And the only reason I learned the story and busted him on it was because I was home. Like this was post-college. Like I think I had a child. And he like, my dad loves mustard, by the way. Like he has a collection of mustard. And we had one of these old like Bon Marm, you know, the jelly containers that he had filled with this delightful, glorious mustard. It was so good. And we were sampling the mustard over some family meal. And that was the mustard that he told us was the Costco free mustard that he'd been getting.
Because to be fair, I remember using the same logic when we got stuck in a teepeeing situation in middle school and we needed toilet paper and they weren't, I mean, technically you weren't stealing toilet paper from the gas station because it was free. They just never expected that people would take it all to go teepee. We felt really bad about it. We returned it. But like that's, so that's your dad's thought process with the mustard. It's not like,
right.
The mustard was technically free. They just,
or that was like my grandma at Starbucks. Like she'd get a cup of coffee at Starbucks and then she'd think that you could take like all the sugars you wanted in perpetuity forever, right? Like you could just get as much Sweet and Low and like Splenda as you wanted just for life.
To be fair, it's free.
Right. I mean, you could just, anyone could walk in and grab those Sweet and Lows and Splendas.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. It's true.
I don't think Paul would condone.
These are the gray areas in ethics, the ethical human decisions we have to make shopping.
The ethical gray areas.
Okay. Well, Graham, I know that this is way past your bedtime.
Oh, we're taping late tonight because in Australia, it's a brisk early morning. And so Kirsten and I had to tape a little late tonight in order to accommodate this interview.
You know what we have to talk about too is, you know what Boots did for Lent? You know what he gave up? Which I feel like is a little bit, I respect him. I want to support him. Okay. But like, it's a little bit like of changing my life without asking me. Mm. He gave up going to bed after 10 p.m. Or staying up after 10 p.m.
So he's going to bed early.
So lights out every night, 10 p.m., TV off, lights out, no email, no phones, none of that.
That's impossible for you. How do you do that? You're a night owl.
No, I'm not a night owl. He's a night owl. So this has been a real bit. I mean, but I'm not like at 10 p.m., but I have to say it, like 8 o'clock at night now, I start stressing. Like, oh my gosh, I gotta, you know, but I'm actually loving it.
Oh, well, that's like my MO. I'm always sleeping by 10. So welcome to my world.
What time do your kids go to sleep?
Well, unfortunately, like 9:45.
So it's like kids go to, so you don't get that like buffer time.
I literally have zero buffer in my life. I have no buffer. The moment I open my eyes, I have a child. The moment I close my eyes, there's a child. There's not a minute of buffer.
Well, while they're at school.
Yes, that is true. We do have those little school times. So we're taking those. But yeah, no, we're in the no buffer stage.
Yeah. Okay. I guess always a phase, but I really liked kind of that hour of the house being quiet at night, but it is nice to get a good night's sleep.
What time do your kids go to sleep? You went to sleep at 11. They went to bed at 10.
No, not 10. They go to bed at like 9. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you know, it's not enough buffer because it's like, you know, technically they do. But
that's impossible. There's no way your oldest who's 14 goes to bed at 9 o'clock. Mine goes to bed at like 9:45.
What time did yours get up?
7.
Oh, see, we get up at like 5:45.
That's rough. Okay, 5:45.
He's got to be out the bus at like 7.
Ooh, that's crazy. Okay, yeah. So we can sleep till 7.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't sleep till 7.
It's the same hours. It's the same hours then. Okay, just checking. I mean, they're growing. But anyway, this is probably a boring conversation to everyone else. But I have to say, I'm getting I'm enjoying this. Also, you know what else I've been doing that has been a game changer?
Do
So I
tell.
read, I mean, this is not breaking news. Everybody knows this, but you're supposed to like drink a lemon water before you have your first cup of coffee.
Yes, I have heard that. It's hard though.
Well, I have found my hack is that at night I put a lemon water really cold with like a couple ice cubes by my sink in the bathroom, and then
Okay.
I get up and I have
Oh,
it.
it's a nice normal temperature and you're ready to go.
And so like I
You're
drink it while I'm walking down the stairs to make my coffee. And by the time I've gotten downstairs and the coffee's brewed, I've had it.
Oh, that's good.
Like
Can I give
make
you
the
another
lemon.
hack? You're actually supposed to drink kind of warm lemon water. That actually helps
I
it.
know, but that's just a bridge too far. I'm starting slow.
Okay. All right. I would prefer the warm beverage in the morning, but just saying.
It knocks you out though. I mean, not knocks you out. It wakes you up. It knocks you off your feet or asleep or whatever. You know
I
what I mean?
want to tell our listeners, though, for a second, though, that like we only bring really good interviews because Kirsten and I actually taped two interviews today and we scratched one.
We did scratch
So
one. It was nice, but it just wasn't, we didn't feel like it was value, and we respect your time. So,
I think that's what I'm
yeah.
saying. So this is an excellent interview. This is a Dr. Harrison is fascinating. I think you're really going to enjoy this. But just so you know, and I think this kind of goes with the people that we advertise with too, is that we turn down advertisers. We're really, to be honest, we love it if you have interest in the people we advertise with, but if not, that's fine too. It doesn't really matter to us.
But we get them. We look for people and on sponsors you would like, and we look for guests you would like. So also let us know. We're always looking for new ideas.
Yeah, we haven't had any emails in a while. I think we really do need some emails.
No.
But at the Welcome Home Podcast on Instagram, send us a message and we can get some good guests. Actually, we should ask Mary Alice, can you do a quick, she's our editor. Can you just quick put a quick insert in here?
So you can reach us at thewelcomehomepod@gmail.com. That is thewelcomehomepod@gmail.com.
She keeps us on our game. We would love some more. Oh, and also some more reviews on iTunes. We haven't asked that for a while. Like, I think
Only
that's a
if you
nice
like
thing to
us,
do.
though.
Well, if not, no. The funniest ones are the people who hate us. But in
Okay,
addition, I had
if you hate us, be
this is the
original.
house.
Don't
This
say
is my housekeeping session
Kirsten
too.
interrupts too much. Like it's been said, we know, we heard it. I'm sorry, I'm working on it. I'm really working on
You don't interrupt, you're fine. It doesn't even bother me. We're too close for that. But the other thing I was going to say was hello to all of our Australian listeners. We actually have an Australian guest on. So hooray, hooray, hooray.
All right.
That's for
Well,
you.
without
This is a shout
further
out to everyone.
ado,
That was all my housekeeping. I had to get that out.
thank you, Graham. Thank you for excellent housekeeping. Without further ado, to use Graham's favorite expression.
Dr. Paul Harrison and everyone, welcome home. Dr. Harrison. Paul, our new bestie from Down Under. Welcome to Welcome Home. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm really excited to have a chat with you.
We are thrilled. You are actually all over the US press. I read about you. I can't even imagine. I think New York Times, Wall Street Journal, you are kind of everywhere. But I've been wanting to do a show on this topic for years. And I know you deal with all levels of consumer behavior. You are a chair of the Department of Consumer Behavior, among others. But what I want to talk to you today is the supermarket phenomenon. That is something that's prevalent, I think, in many of the lives of our listeners. And I know that you can definitely shed a little bit of light on that too, for us. So if you don't mind, can you just kind of, we're just trying to get a little bit of background as to what happens when we are shopping on a day-to-day basis. And is there kind of a broad overview you can kind of start with?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think one of the things, maybe a really broad overview, would be to say that humans are pretty unaware of how the external environment influences their decision making. And we're also quite vain about it as well. We all think we're in control. But most of our behavior, and research in this kind of field for the last 20 or 30 years has shown that nearly all of our behavior is automatic. It happens outside our awareness, that lots of things are learned but become unconscious behaviors. And so, whether you're in a supermarket or whether you're in IKEA or whether you're in any kind of consumption environment, there's a lot going on. And the other big overview that I always like to say to people is that you're a single individual with your limited capacity to think through why you're doing what you're doing. Whereas, particularly with supermarkets, particularly with these big multinational retail environments, they know a lot about what buttons to press. They also know you know, the trade-off as well. And I think this is the other thing, is that it's not always about, you know, people being pushed towards things they don't want to do. They already know what you want to do. They just basically give you a gentle nudge. And, you know, in psychology and in consumer behavior, you know, we don't actually want to convert the people who don't want our products. What we're doing is that we're looking for people who are goal-oriented, and by goal-oriented, we can talk about that in a little bit of detail if you like. They're the people who are most useful to marketers, because they know that the effort required to convert them, to get them to do the thing that you want them to do, is not as much as people who are never going to be your customers.
Okay, so wait, just unpack that a little bit. Goal-oriented. So what would that mean? Who would that be?
Okay, well, a good example of goal orientation, and I'll use it in relation to a study as well, is that a lot of people may have heard of subliminal advertising, this idea that you are given subliminal messages without you knowing, subliminal meaning below the kind of awareness threshold. The thing is that it does tend to work to some degree, but only if you're goal-oriented towards the thing that is being promoted to you. So if I'm not hungry, if I've never eaten, and I'll use a brand, if I've never eaten a McDonald's hamburger, if I don't like hamburgers, then any kind of messaging, whether it's subliminal or superliminal or you know, out there and we notice it, is not really going to have an effect, because I'm not oriented towards actually wanting to eat that burger. The other thing to be thinking about is goal orientation is, if I feel a sense of uncomfortableness, so a sense that there's something missing, that might be when I become goal oriented and I look out to find ways to try and understand how I can resolve that sense of unease. And so goal orientation is, you already have to have a sense that I want to solve this problem in some way. And over time, we will have built up different ways to think about how we solve that problem. And nearly all consumption, nearly all behavior really, is about us noticing unconsciously or consciously that there is a gap between our kind of desired self and our actual self. And then what marketers and consumer behavior specialists do is that they try to make us feel like this is going to solve our problem. And it's, whether it's supermarkets or not, it is always about saying, this is how you're going to solve your problem. And that's why, you know, they use all these different techniques.
My head is spinning. I have so many follow-up questions.
Sorry.
No, it's fascinating. It's a little, I don't know, do other students have this reaction? Do you love if I just put myself as a student in your class? But do your students have the same reaction as me, where it feels a little like upsetting, maybe, that I'm so easily, because I believe you, but I'm like so sad that I'm so easily influenced.
Well, Paul, okay, let me give you some background on the two of us. Kirsten is the most easily manipulated person. She falls for everything and I fall for nothing. So we are the two opposite levels of consumers. In fact, I remember when I first got a little taste of this when I was going through business school, I remember them saying that they realized that because most people in the world are right-handed, that they, I guess most people would break right when they entered a store. Right? They would move to the right side. And so they almost had created, they put all the money, the attention, the focus into moving the, I guess, client or customer through the right side of the store. And I always felt like I was beating them because I intentionally break left whenever I walk through a store.
Yes. Well, maybe you are in your own little way beating them. And look, you know, there is some research that says that if you get people to move through a store in a particular way, that they spend a little bit more. It's, you know, $2 per shop or something like that. From memory, I think it's if you get them to go counterclockwise, I think they spend a little bit more. But I think this is the thing is, and to come to your point, Kirsten, I think what it comes down to is that actually nobody should necessarily need to know all of these things. I think it's more about an awareness. And in terms of my students, and I teach in the MBA program at my university, at Deakin University, and one of the things is that what my goal is to undo some of that element that they think that they're in control, so that in a way, first of all, that they behave ethically. And I think that's one thing that I try to build into any teaching program, is that having knowledge is actually a very powerful thing. And so if you're running a business, you need to actually be responsible with that knowledge. And the other thing then is to say that you should feel uncomfortable in your current thinking, because if you don't feel uncomfortable, then you're not learning anything. And so my task is always to at least undo some of the maybe want of a better phrase, the arrogance that might kind of exist amongst humans, that, you know, that we think we're in control, that we think we know all of the reasons why we're doing what we're doing.
So we have a sponsor for you, Graham, and this sponsor could not be more near and dear to our hearts, nor more timely, because our favorite holiday is coming up.
Well, in Halloween, no, it's Mother's Day. It's Mother's Day.
By the way, I don't want to pick a bone with you, but I have to remind you that this week is actually Graduate Student Appreciation Week, and I don't feel nearly appreciated by you.
No one's done anything for you.
You've done nothing to mark this. Where's my corporate gift basket? Okay.
Well, maybe we'll take a picture and put it in a frame. How about that?
No, that's so old school.
Yeah, it is old school. So the best thing is, so we have our number one, we have sold a lot of frames for Aura Frames because they're amazing. So anyone who doesn't know what they are, Aura Frames, truly, we met them years ago at a conference and the product is so cool. It's a digital frame that you can upload any of your pictures to anytime. Anyone in your family can upload their pictures to, and you can share them and change them out and plug it in your house. And it is the easiest to use frame you've ever seen. Like, it's seamless. You know how when you open your an iPhone, like when you get a new iPhone and you open the box and it just like somehow sets itself up for you? That's kind of like an Aura frame, and they're beautiful.
They are beautiful. That's why we were so attracted to them, is because they're attractive. It has been named the number one digital frame by Wirecutter, Graham's favorite magazine, and has been selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. And we all know that Graham is the Gail and I'm the Oprah. But Oprah's favorite things 3 years running. It's guaranteed to make mom smile. And that actually is true, because my mom hates all things techie and it's her favorite thing and it's in her kitchen.
Well, and don't forget, they also now they've gotten like Aura frames get better and better and better all the time. You can now do video clips together.
Oh, I know that. We have video clips. I watched some show up in my mom's kitchen. So from now until Mother's Day, listeners can save on the perfect gift and visit Aura when they visit Aura Frames. So that's A-U-R-A frames.com. And you can use our code WELCOMEHOME to get up to $40 off while supplies last. Terms and conditions, of course, apply. But that's actually a pretty smoking deal. This has really been like, no one knows what to get their mom. And
I think it's best for grandmas as well. I love this for grandmas and like father-in-laws, people who, and moms as well, obviously, but I just think it's a wonderful gift. Like if you have someone who's a little bit older, I think it's just the sweetest, most thoughtful gift for them.
Yes. Also, you know what else I think it'd be really sweet for is to give to a mom who is working in an office. And you could give your kids, like my kids have the app on their phone so they can upload photos to my mom. So anyway, it's great. It's wonderful.
We love it. And the code is welcome home, all one word. So welcome home, you get up to $40 off while supplies last. Terms and conditions apply. And AuraFrames.com, A-U-R-A frames.com.
Thank you, Aura. Aura Frames. No. Let's put her down. Let's show her all the things she's falling for. So Graham walks into a supermarket. How do they trick her first?
We're talking
That's a great
specifically
question.
About Graham now, are we? Okay, I don't know you well enough, Graham.
Go for it, Paul. It's a very comfortable space here.
Okay, good. I think one of the first things in a perfectly designed supermarket, because this is the other thing, is that there's a lot of really poorly designed supermarkets. And I think we have to come to terms with that, is that a lot of supermarkets at the local level have their own control and there are people who work there who don't necessarily draw upon, I guess, the research and the knowledge. At the kind of corporate level, they're trying to roll out what they know, and the knowledge evolves quite a bit over time. But one of the first things that you might notice when you walk into a well-designed supermarket, and I see this in the kind of newer ones, is I guess the first thing is that you're confronted with something that is fresh and lovely and positive. And so you might have flowers there, or you might have the fruit and vegetables, or you might have the bakery. I know at one of my local supermarkets now, there's a cafe. So it's about saying this is a welcoming place. Come on in. Now that you've made the decision to even come to the supermarket, we want to make it as positive for you. So you'll never see, I don't know, toilet paper and cleaning products at the front of the supermarket. And the reason is because you don't want to be confronted with that when you first get there.
Oh, that's fascinating. Okay. Do you have Trader Joe's in Australia by any chance?
I've been to Trader Joe's in the US, but we don't.
It's like a flower shop at the front of the store. Yes. And that's exactly what you're right. You're right. Or the little cafe that just makes you think, ooh, let me just go to the deli and I'll get a sandwich and then I'll sit at the cafe. This would be so nice. Yeah. Okay.
And they're blurring the line. One of the things that supermarkets are getting better at now is blurring the line between the commercial and the personal. So it is now saying this is actually a place for you to come and spend time. It's interesting too, because there's, again, conflicting research about how long is the best time to spend in a supermarket. And we can come back to that as well, because I think it's a really interesting study, a couple of studies that have looked at, you know, you don't want people in for too long, but you also want them in for it's kind of like this.
Why don't you not want them in for too long? Do they start putting things back on the shelves?
Well, the worst customers are the people who spend between the 10 and 25 minute mark, because they spend less per minute that they're in. So you either want to get people in and out really quickly, or you want to keep them in for a longer time. The 10 to 20, it's a reverse U-shape kind of thing. It's that the highest return customers are the ones who spend a short time and a long time. It's the annoying 10 to 25 minute customers that you don't want in there.
Oh, I get it. Okay. So it's like, I'm an idiot. I've got a party coming up. It's Friday night. I'm going to like kamikaze shop. I'm going to get everything, but I'm probably going to spend a fortune because I'm in such a rush that I'm not paying attention to prices. And then the opposite is, ooh, I haven't been shopping. I'm trying to bulk up for a full week. So I'm just going to spend an hour and a half in the store, but you don't want the 10 to 25 minute guys. So those are the ones who are like, time to dawdle. Not really in a hurry, but at the same point in time. Oh, I get it. I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah. And we may not know, you know, we don't notice this and we don't look at our watches. And one of the things that supermarkets, most of them do, is they don't have windows. So you don't really know, or clocks. So you don't know how long you're there.
It's like a casino.
It is like a casino.
And I'm realizing I have no idea how long it takes me to shop. Cause when you were saying that, I was trying to guess. I have no idea how long I spend in a grocery store.
I'm never shopping between 10 and 25 again. You will not see me in that inverse U.
No, that's good for you. That's bad for the stores.
Well, I think this is, and this is maybe a myth of supermarkets as well, is that, you know, a lot of people say, oh, they put the milk and the bread at the end of the aisle so that you go and spend a lot of time there. To some degree, that works. But as research has kind of evolved, they've discovered, or we've discovered, that actually getting the people in and out really quickly actually has a much higher return on investment than having them in for a kind of medium level of time. And I think that's the other thing, is that the stuff that has high return on margin, so high profit, and the stuff that you know people are going to buy regularly, that's actually smart to put it at the front of the supermarket, because people are going to go there, they're going to feel a bit uncomfortable about just getting a litre of milk or a pint of milk or something like that, but they're going to buy a couple of things. But the cost to the supermarket for, in terms of return on investment, the return on investment is much higher if you can get them in and out within 10 minutes. And so that mythology around sticking the fridges at the back, that works kind of, but only for those people who are going to spend a significant amount of time in the supermarket.
Or the restrooms. That drives me nuts that they put the restrooms in the back of the supermarket.
Do you have restrooms in supermarkets? We don't have them in Australia. They got rid of them a long time ago.
What are you supposed to do? My gosh, if you're spending 45 minutes in the restroom, that's impossible. I don't know.
Maybe they're there, but they're just a bit scary. I don't think I'd ever go to a restroom supermarket.
Oh my goodness.
So, I don't want to jump topics here, but I am going to, just out of curiosity.
Yes, let's.
So what about the like online shopping grocery stores? Because wow. I actually have a hard time I know you're supposed to shop with a list, I'm sure of it, but I don't. And I don't just buy what's on my list anyway. It doesn't matter. I'm the biggest impulse buyer. But that said, I'm very bad at putting things in my cart if it's a virtual cart. What are the tricks? Have the supermarkets mastered this yet? Or are we still in control?
Well, look, they've mastered it in different ways. And look, I think that the online shopping environment is constantly evolving. And I've done a bit of consulting with some of the kind of bigger supermarket chains around the online environment. I think one of the difficulties we had moving online was what they were trying to do was to recreate the kind of shop store experience, the bricks and mortar experience, and put it online. But we kind of know that people think differently when they're online as opposed to when they're in the supermarket or in the actual bricks and mortar store. And one of the things that they know is that if they can move you through the process online fast, people are more likely to not defect, not leave the online store. So that's why, as you kind of, you probably notice this, as you get closer and closer to the end of your shopping trip, they're doing things now like, would you like to save your credit card details, or would you like to use Apple Pay or Google Pay or something like that? And what that means is that from the point psychologically where you've said, okay, I'm committed to buying these things, they do not want to create any more barriers to you getting out of the store, out of the online store, the virtual store. The other thing they do is that they, and it happens with online gambling as well, is that they're constantly gathering data about how you shop, how you move around within the online environment. This is kind of like what, you know, they were doing at Stanford University back in the 50s and the 60s, doing experiments on people just without an ethics approval. You're constantly experimenting what works and what doesn't for their different customers. And so when you sign up and when you shop online, you're part of an experiment that is constantly refining. And the interesting thing, I was about to say great thing, the interesting thing about artificial intelligence and neural networking is that it is constantly conducting. So it poses hypotheses within the kind of black box of the technology, and then it tests those hypotheses on people as they shop. And so we don't have to go out into supermarkets and get people to fill in questionnaires anymore. For the most part, particularly with online shopping, they're doing the AI and the individuals running the kind of digital side of the platform.
You're saying we're subject to that just by virtue of our shopping patterns online?
Yes.
That we've already agreed to that?
Yeah. And the point is that you've chosen to be in the super. I don't even know if they have in the terms and conditions whether they're saying you're going to be part of an experiment. But literally every time that you go online, you are participating in data gathering, and there's huge amounts of data. And maybe, I'm trying to remember now, maybe 5 or 10 years ago, one of the big supermarket chains kind of came to me or came to us and said, we've got all this data, how do we analyze it? There is so much data that they don't know what to do with. But certainly where there's profit to be made, they're constantly understanding or trying to understand how different stimuli, different ads or images or pricing, or even the shape of the kind of put it in your basket kind of approach, how that influences decision making.
So what did you find? So they came to you, they said, devise something. What was your first move? How did you handle it?
Well, one of the interesting things, and this wasn't related to the work that I did, but one of the interesting things was, if we're talking about kind of digital shopping, is that there's a theory, Gestalt theory, which basically says that we see shapes and we like to close off shapes. And the classic one is, you know, with a lot of logos, they may not have a triangle or something like that, but they have the outline of a triangle. So you fill that gap in. With some online put it in your basket type things, they have a half closed shape of the put it in your basket. And our natural inclination is that we want to close that. And as we kind of run our cursor over it, it closes. And that then is more likely to make a person click put it in the basket than if it was just a blank or just a straight kind of box or something like that. So even those kinds of things have an effect on the decisions. And it's not everybody, but it's enough in terms of margins to push people over the line.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
What about coupons? That's something that's always confused me. What is this? Psychology? Has it?
Yeah. Couponing is not an Australian thing. So whenever I go to the US, and it's not even because I spend a lot of time in the UK and Europe, it is a very American thing. And I understand the idea, which is to kind of create a sense of loyalty. But it is a very particular person who's drawn to coupons, I would imagine. And it's probably people who are relatively organized. I think that's the other thing is actually you do have to be organized. They're pushing it onto the digital platform and making it a little bit easier. But my take on it, and certainly the research that I've seen, is that it's actually not about you using the coupon, but about you feeling as if you would get a discount if you remember to use the coupons. And I think that's, again, a psychological thing. We kind of, you know, talk a lot about this idea of how we give weight to decision making. And if you feel that you're being offered discounts, even if you never use those discounts, we have a halo effect, which says, well, I can trust this particular brand, this supermarket, because they care about me. They're giving me pricing discounts, even if you always forget your coupon book or something like that. Although, I speak interesting. My brother, whenever I suggest we go out for dinner or something like that, he says, oh, I'll just check my coupon book. So there are coupons in Australia. It's just it's just not as common as it is in the US.
A restaurant coupon book? I like that.
Yeah. It's an interesting, I think it's like a restaurant club or something, but he's always big on the, here's one where we get a 10% discount. It's kind of like, yeah, but do we really want to go there?
Yes. No, there was a show here. It was maybe like 10 years ago and it was called Extreme Couponing. And it was these people who would just fill up card after card. And like, they didn't need 700 Gatorades, but if they bought them, it was all free, you know? And I was so inspired and I kind of became like
People went crazy for that show, Kirsten.
I was crazy. I loved
it. Was it like Survivor at the end?
Oh, it was Survivor.
You had to vote people out.
No, they would have, I kid you not, 9 supermarket carts full of stuff, just like Dove soap, whatever it was. Yeah. And they would ring up. It would take hours to ring it up.
How many air fresheners do you need, you know?
Yes. And the total bill would be like $2.17. And nobody understood it. The entire American population does not understand how that is a possibility because nobody understands how to work coupons except the 12 people in our nation who have fully understood how to work coupons.
But did they really understand it? Because nobody needs 100 Gatorades or 100 air fresheners. But it was fascinating. But I agree. It is like, it's more about, it was a lot of work and
you beat the system.
It was about beating the system.
Yeah. We love beating the system. That's our favorite thing to do.
Does the same thing apply? And this is interesting too. I love hearing the foreign perspective on this is, what about the discounts? Like just sales? What's the psychology of the sale?
Okay. So that's a very interesting kind of field. Some studies have actually shown that even the word sale increases the likelihood that a person will be drawn towards it. Very few people actually check whether something is on sale, but the word sale and even something like the color red that says sale, it does have an effect on people's minds, which is this is something worth considering. If you kind of think about the brain, just think about the brain for a moment, that basically most of the decision-making that happens in the kind of what we call the limbic system. So the kind of the emotional part of the brain, people like to think that they think, but firing up that prefrontal cortex, firing up that thinking brain requires huge, huge amounts of energy. And we don't like to do it because we're not very good at actually using energy. I like to kind of think of most humans as being a little bit like a Labrador. You know, it just prefers to just sit around and kind of eat and do stuff. Wow. Thinking requires effort and we don't like to put a lot of effort. The only time that we actually are good at using that executive function, that thinking brain, is for small calculations, for things that might be a little bit new, but it's quite exhausting. So if we think about something like sales, for example, over time, what we've learned is that when something is on sale, it's better value. And that's the process that we go through. By simply thinking about it in that way, simply giving it a little bit more weight, that thing that is on sale has an advantage over the things that aren't on sale. Now, if everything's on sale all the time, then there's no advantage. But we actually, if you think about trying to be as efficient as possible in decision making, our brain will go, it's just more efficient to not think this through, just to assume that because something is on sale, it's better. It's the same with even luxury items or, you know, one of the things, I don't know, again, in the US, but I do remember seeing in like places like Trader Joe's is that, you know, like something that looks a bit French always feels a little bit more classy.
Oh, wait, did you see number 11 on our outline? Foreign things, why are they more fun? Yeah.
And again, you know, we don't check the bona fides. It might have been made in France, but it's very unlikely. And I think, again, even if it's got like a French kind of writing or something like that, I think, again, these are the kinds of things that just influence. And even things like, you may be familiar with this study, but there was a study that was done quite a long time ago now, about 20 or 30 years ago, that was done in a wine store. And they found that when they played French music in the wine store, it increased sales of French wine. And it also increased, if they played classical music, people spent nearly 70% more on the bottle of wine, on a bottle of wine. 70% than when they played top 40 music.
They think they're at a classy cocktail party, not at just at like the neighborhood bar.
Exactly. 70% more fancy. I don't know. So, and again, when the study found that people didn't notice the music that was being played when they left. They didn't even ask, you know, they kind of just said, so tell us about your experience, that kind of thing. So, again, these things are happening at an unconscious level. We're not conscious of how it influences our decision-making. We may be conscious that it's happening, but we're very, again, like I say, we're very vain. We think, oh, no, we're not going to be affected by this.
Do you feel, I'm going off topic now, but Dr. Harrison Paul, that you have studied the human brain and its psychology and its functioning. Do you feel like we're all a little bit of idiots all the time? I mean, what is that?
Well, he said we're like Labrador, so.
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, not.
Labradors are lovely.
I know, but I mean, does it, when you fully understand the way that the brain works as you do, does it make you just, because I've done enough psychology study or to be a little bit dangerous as well. Does it kind of make you wonder about yourself sometimes? Like, does it kind of make you just throw up your hands every day and just say like, oh, I'm just a product of my environment, you know?
At a personal level, mm-hmm. I think I'm very chill with it all because I think I understand. I think what I do is I accept that I'm flawed and I'm not hard on myself when I make mistakes. Even though I am in my head on myself sometimes. But I think the thing is that one of the things I try to say to people is everybody makes these mistakes. Everybody is flawed. We're all a product of an evolutionary process that is incredibly slow, whereas the external environment moves incredibly fast. So don't be too hard on yourself. Do your best, but if with the things that are important to you, try and process it, try and spend a little bit of time to think it through. One of the things that, you know, whether it's supermarkets or whether it's, you know, getting a credit card or anything like that is if it's something that has the potential to be high risk, then step away from the decision-making process, talk to somebody who you trust, somebody who can give you a kind of different perspective. And so, I mean, I know that there are a lot of people who get very uppity about their supermarket shopping and saving 10 cents here and there. You're probably losing 10 cents in all sorts of other ways. And, mm-hmm. you know, anyone who's done economics would understand that kind of thing of, you know, that we lose money all the time in terms of the way that we compare pricing relative to other prices. But the things that are important to you, and for me, the things that are important to me are my relationships with my kids, my relationships, the journey of life. I think those kinds of things are important. And so I put effort into those things. But, you know, if I go and I buy, I don't know, French jam or something like that, it doesn't bother me because it actually makes me feel good and happy. And I live a fairly affluent life, although I did grow up in a very poor family. I think one of the other things that I've discovered is, and one of the things I guess I've learned over the last couple of years, and my daughter has taught me this, is to say, well, you know, life is short, you know, why worry about those things that that you can't change? Why not take from it what you can to have a happy life. I don't know if I'm getting too philosophical.
This is no, I'm thinking this is absolutely beautiful. I never expected to take this direction. This is gorgeous. Well, no, and
it's interesting. Like, so you're saying, like, at the end of the day, because I'll say it's more about I don't know where the guilt comes from, but like, oh, if I don't sit there, like, I don't know if you guys have like we have Costco here, but you know, it's like a warehouse club, you know?
Are you familiar with Costco? Hold she, he might.
I am familiar with, we do have a Costco warehouse here in Melbourne.
Okay. Gotcha. That's a big thing. Big thing.
Yeah. And we talk about Costco.
My father is basically a professional Costco retired.
He's his own Graham because she goes to Sam's Club, not Costco. It's a whole thing we have to unpack on another episode. But but at Costco, they do, you know, the price per ounce or the price per unit.
Yes. Yes.
I look at those. And, you know, this isn't spending a lot of time, but what you're saying is in the grand scheme of things, because like, I don't want to be the sucker, but you're saying in the grand scheme of things, like the amount of time I'm spending looking at that at the end of the day, like, you know, one
time. Does it mean you're not hanging with your kids? Well, I think unit pricing is an interesting one.
I'm not saving so much money that it's like, you know what, this is time well spent here.
Kirsten, I love that you're checking unit pricing. That's go you. Go you. That's
I'm always checking unit pricing.
What it comes down to, and I don't know if it's a term that you have in the US, but whatever floats your boat. I think if it makes you happy, as was it your father, Kirsten, who does this? Mm-hmm. If it makes him happy to be doing that, then do it. I think that's the thing, is that don't try and conform to external forces saying this is the way you should do things. But actually, he might be just the kind of person, or, you know, person X might be just the kind of person who gets their happiness from feeling like they've made a saving. But I think that's the thing, is that we've got to find our own way, the things that make us happy. If it drags you down and you find that it's making your life unpleasant, then, you know, to some degree, you need to kind of step away from it for a bit. Yeah. Okay. And
you know what makes me so happy? The first time my children, Paul, ever saw I'm forgetting the name. What's it called? Graham, help me. The infomercial. The first time I ever saw an infomercial made me so happy, because when you talk about the psychology of consumerism, like, to watch a child who's never watched an infomercial come in, woke us up out of a sleep and said, guys, there's a special offer. It's only available right now. And if you call right now, you're going to get two. And it was amazing. They're like, your water could be contaminated, Mom. And to watch like children being manipulated by these things that were like,
I love watching my children get manipulated. They had that one day with some sort of funny app. It was amazing. They came in and they're like, Mom, you've got to get this app. It helps you save so much money and blah, blah, blah. And they were so serious about it. Oh, it was made my day. It was so cute.
It's funny to see like children who've never been marketed to before, their first experience with marketing, and how they're like, this could save us millions, Mom. We need to install solar panels tomorrow. We're wasting time, you know? It's great.
I've seen adults behave the same way. I think that's the interesting thing, is that we never really stop. I remember having a meeting with a whole bunch of regulators, and they said it would never happen to us. And I was able to kind of trick them into making decisions that they weren't thinking about. And I think one of the things is that giving people a sense of control makes people feel like they're in control. And I don't know if it's the same in the US, but one of the really interesting things in Australia is the energy conversation, you know, so gas and electricity and things like that. And so all of the governments have rolled out these apps that tell you how much energy you're using, which is a bit like unit pricing. Mm. Whether, you know, some people, I imagine that lots of people are downloading the app when it is first installed, looking at it and going, gee, I use 7 cents in the last hour, and then not looking at it again for another 3 or 4 weeks or never again, and it just sits on their phone. But it gives you this sense of control. And again, if we think about what it is to be human, feeling in control is probably better than feeling out of control, because even a sense of feeling like you're in control is a good thing for your mental health. I just think that a lot of decision making that goes on is that we like to feel like we're in control. And if we do feel like we're in control, then that's, you know, half of the problem solved.
Genius. I think that's why Peloton and Apple Watch have done so well. I think humans love metrics. I think we love a good little metric, a way to compete against ourselves and measure against ourselves and feel like we've met our standing goal and our sitting goal and our moving goal, all the goals.
And it feels objective as well. You know, it kind of feels like, oh, this is sciencey. So, you know, it's got to be right. I think a good friend of mine, Cordelia Fine, she writes quite a bit around this. She talks about how, you know, attaching somebody to an fMRI machine in terms of their brain, it just makes people feel as if this is a much more reasonable test than actually walking through people's kind of problems that they might be having in their lives. Because if you can point towards something going on in the brain, people just go, oh, yeah, that's a machine. Yeah, machines can tell us something. Whereas, you know, we do feel like humans are flawed. And I think an app technology itself gives us the impression that it's objective when in fact it's not. And we know that because, you know, just the mere fact of programming something into an app decides what's important and what isn't important.
Good point.
I feel like you have unpacked a lot this evening.
I know. I mean, this was meant to be a supermarket conversation.
I know. That's how, I don't think you're, this is your first time on Welcome Home. Paul, you've actually earned an invitation back.
You're very kind.
Actually, I had one more question I'm sure we'll come up with a few more, but I remember learning a while ago, and I can't believe this hasn't made it, because I learned this back in 07, that at some point we were going to be RFID driven, right? So that you would walk into a, getting what?
No, I'm just saying, that was a big, everything's going to be RFID. And then it kind of,
The concept being, let me just say that for anyone who's not familiar, right? You go into a supermarket that during the Super Bowl and you realize that you need to buy salsa and tortilla chips. And the price is, rather than, you know, the way it's printed out right now. So the tortilla chips would be $2.29. And that's printed out on a, you know, piece of little cardboard that's stuck in front of the tortilla chips. It would actually be a movable RFID tag such that the price of tortilla chips and salsa and or beer would go up during the Super Bowl, you know, and that you'd have fluctuating commodity prices. And it made sense to me that that was something that I could actually see happening. I just feel like it's very old fashioned that we still have little paper pieces in front of our products. Think about it. Gas prices change on a daily basis, and we're totally fine with that. So why that many years later are we still walking into supermarkets with where we're having staff that has to do like price changes on things and put out little stickers? That just seems so old fashioned.
I think it's when technology pushes up against kind of human feelings of unfairness. We do the same thing with, you know, Ubers. When we catch an Uber, they have
surge
prices during surging, that whenever you book a flight on an airline, they have different pricing. So I think this is the thing, is that different contexts don't necessarily lend themselves to the same strategy or the same tactics. And certainly, you know, this is the thing, is that you don't want to necessarily copy the tactic of one context, whether it's, you know, airlines or whether it's something like that, and then apply it to yours. And so it is more also about the kind of human issues. People probably, when these things started being introduced, people probably started saying that's unfair. And fairness is a big part of, you know, human behavior and human decision making. But people were okay with the fairness of airline prices or Uber surge pricing. We can probably think of a whole bunch of different ways where pricing does fluctuate depending on the context. Supermarkets are an interesting one. They do fluctuate. It's not as fast as it. And if you think about things even like end cap displays and stuff like that, they're about fluctuating prices and sales and things like that. But it's not as, I guess it's not as extreme as maybe, and we're not as willing to accept it as it is for other contexts.
Well, it's so labor intensive. You have to have some supermarket employee move everything over to the MCAP, move the price thing. I mean, wouldn't it just be great if you could just leave everything where it needs to be, keep it all the same, and just had some sort of RFID computer chip that would just, you could just instantly from the front of the store change the pricing? It just seems smarter to me.
Smarter, but probably more expensive. And cardboard or paper, I don't know. I mean, I think this is the thing, is I do a lot of consulting for organizations. And in the end, a lot of decision making is done kind of at the pointy end. So you give them all this evidence to say, this is probably your best way to do it. But then they go, probably too hard, too expensive. People will come and stab it and wreck it and stuff like that. So let's just not do it. Whereas
just like rip it off. I gotcha.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing, is that there may come a point when these kinds of things work, but it is also, there's a whole bunch of other kind of critical elements. And I'll tell you a story about one particular context where the evidence said one thing, but the decision was completely different. If you're happy for me to tell you this.
Oh, yeah. We're happy.
Cool. So I did a study with a colleague a couple of years ago. We kind of published it in a couple of journals and spoke about it at a couple of conferences. But basically it was about the effect of music and fragrances or smells on decision making. And one of the really interesting things that came out of it was that in reality, and this was in a financial institution, in a bank, and in their branches. And one of the things that came out of it was that actually it had a small effect on a person's loyalty and their kind of experience of the bank, but it had no effect at all on the kind of value of the customer. And one of the really interesting things that came out of that was that as time went on, and as we kind of explained this, we kind of said to the CEO and the head of the organization, the bank itself, saying, look, you know, the bottom line is that it does have an effect, but whether this has an effect on your organizational profits or whatever, is questionable. And the decision was made, well, we quite like the smell and we quite like the music, so let's just go ahead and do it anyway. And so there was this whole kind of, oh my gosh, you know, like we've gone to all this trouble, but in the end they go, yeah, but it smells nice, so I quite like it. So literally it was the decision of the, you know, the executive just went, yeah, it's nice. We don't care if it has no return on investment. That's fine. And I think that's how a lot of business decisions are made. You know, a lot of sponsorship, for example, really has no effect on the brand, but people love turning up to football games with their colleagues and stuff like that. So I think yes. You bring the human part to it. It still comes back to what I was talking about earlier, is that sometimes we can get so caught up in the data, so caught up in the knowledge, when actually we're just saying, yeah, but, you know, I'm the CEO. I quite like taking, you know, business people to the footy. So yeah, it's all right. I don't mind.
That's amazing. Kind of thing. So this is genius. Okay. So you're telling me that when, you know, I don't even know, Lay's potato chips sponsors the Super Bowl or whatever it will be, or Kia cars sponsor the Super Bowl, that it really has no effect on external consumers, that it's just Kia wants to do that just for the fun of it.
Partly. Like, I think it's, well, one of them
I'm not going to buy a Kia because Kia sponsored the Super Bowl. Like, yes. I will never do that.
The trade-off is, so it's not as direct as that. The trade-off is, if you're there, you have a presence, mm-hmm. and your competition doesn't. That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. That Kia will only appeal to the people who are goal-oriented. We return to that term. Mm. Who want to own a car like a Kia. So if you've never even considered owning a Kia, then you're not interesting to them. But what it does is it reinforces the likelihood of people who are already goal-oriented to buy that, and particularly with advertising. And interestingly, it's good that you brought up car brands, because car brands advertising works best for people who are already owners, because what it does is it says to them, you're a good decision maker. You've made the right decision. Now go forth and tell all your friends how much you love your car, because we love to be told that we're smart, and yes, advertising tells us we're smart.
That's amazing. Mm. Oh.
Kirsten, you stopped us dead in our tracks, Paul.
I'm just thinking about all the times. Yeah. I'm just thinking about all our decisions. That's exactly what I'm thinking. I'm thinking about how I spend money. Oh gosh, Paul, we can talk to you all day. This is really interesting. And of course, like how we spend our money, how we spend our time, none of us want to believe we're being manipulated, but you've kind of made it okay. You've taken me from a place of being very upset to, like, you know what, it's fine. So I appreciate it.
Because Paul works for the manipulators. He's hired by all of them.
No, I don't. I actually work for the protectors.
I'm teasing.
But one of the things I would say,
the manipulators.
Yeah, I walk away from them, but I think it's that thing of, I like to secretly, you know, change it a little bit up for them and get them thinking a little bit more ethically. And I think certainly in my teaching, I always kind of say to the students, you know, you do need to be responsible, but I can't go to their houses and their workplaces and say, stop doing that. So, you know, in the end, you give people the tools to do the right thing. Whether they do the right thing or not is another issue.
Well, that comes across for sure. Thank you so much for being here. This was awesome. Dr. Paul Harrison, we appreciate you coming from Deakin Business School all the way from Australia. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. And I'm sure our listeners really enjoyed this as much as we did.
This was fabulous.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thanks so much.
And that's all we have from Kirsten and Graham. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Welcome Home. If you're interested in hearing more from the iconic best friend duo, please subscribe, tell your friends about us, and follow us on Instagram and Facebook for giveaways and other exciting updates. Until next time, welcome home.